on ABC Local Radio, Radio Australia and the World Wide Web. This is Sunday Nights with John Cleary.
Thank you for joining us. I hope it's been a good week for you, a busy one for many. Tonight, Anglicans around the world are struggling with the future of their church. The immediate cause of the momentous events of the past week is sexuality, in particular homosexuality, and the consecration by the Episcopal Church in the United States of an openly gay bishop, Gene Robinson, a year or so ago. These events, deeply opposed by many traditionalists and conservatives within the church, culminated this week in a conference of conservative Anglicans, led among others by the Archbishop of Sydney, Peter Jensen, and Archbishop Akinola of Nigeria, a coming together of the Global South, some described it as. The gathering established a Fellowship of Confessing Anglicans. The group declared it was to establish a separate primate's council and in opposition to that of the Anglican Lambeth Conference, and stated that they do not accept that Anglican identity is determined through recognition of the Archbishop of Canterbury. Well, it seems like all this amounts to nothing short of a schism. And the Anglican Church is not averse to those. The Methodists split in the 18th century, the Anglo-Catholics threatened to do it in the 19th century, and they all but pulled it off. But this time, it could be the real thing. The group has declared it will not formally split from Anglicanism, but will act as an alternate source of leadership within it. But given the Anglican communion is held together by bonds of fellowship rather than law, can this be taken at face value? It's here that those devilish details begin. Well, in a moment, we'll be joined by one of the participants in the Jerusalem Conference, Bishop Robert Forsyth, and by two who have expressed some concern at the direction of the church, Dr. Muriel Porter of Melbourne and the Honourable Robert Forsyth, a former Deputy Premier of Victoria and a leading former Deputy Premier of Victoria and a leading lay member of the Anglican Church in his state. In our second hour this evening, one of the great voices of religious journalism of the past 50 years, Robert Blair Kaiser. Kaiser was the Time magazine correspondent at the historic events of Vatican II in the early 60s. In the late 60s, he was a close observer of Robert Kennedy's ill-fated campaign for the presidency and later wrote a book on the assassination. Robert Blair Kaiser will be our guest in about an hour's time. He's in Australia, of course, for the events surrounding World Youth Day. Later, the Midnight Inquisition and much else to follow, including a special meditation series leading up to the chat room this evening, where Ian Barnes will be our guest. But let us begin without a hint of irony as we hear the old Burt Bacharach song, Make It Easy on Yourself.
Very hard to do. If you really love her, and there's nothing I can do, don't try to spare my feelings, just tell me that we're through. Will make me miss you less. And my darling, if this is goodbye, I just know I'm gonna cry. So run to her before you start crying too.
Jackie Trent. Remember Jackie and Tony? Many years ago, Burt Bacharach and Hal David wrote that back in 1962. Breaking up is hard to do. For some, it's becoming rather more easy. Has the Anglican Church worldwide fractured? And is the Anglican Diocese of Sydney at least partly responsible for the schism? It could be the greatest split in a global church since the Reformation of the 16th century. Or it could be a damp squib. But either way, Australia, and particularly Sydney, is at its centre. And tonight we pose the question, whither Anglicanism? Our guest in the studio is the Bishop of South Sydney, Robert Forsyth. Robert, welcome to you.
Hello, John. Lovely to be here. Excuse my croaky voice.
All right. It's a sort of late case of jet lag.
I think it is. That and going from extremely hot to extremely cold.
And it's also a great pleasure to welcome into our Melbourne studios online Dr. Muriel Porter and Robert Fordham. Welcome to you both.
Hello, John. How are you?
Thank you very much.
Robert Forsyth, first, to get this underway, describe GAFCON, this meeting in Jerusalem, for us. Who met and why?
It was quite an experience. 1,200 people of basically four different kinds, a large number of Africans. The tone and theme was African, so we learnt to boogie in Anglicanism in a way we never do in Sydney. It was fantastic and quite invigorating and spiritually uplifting. There were people from America who were feeling really under pressure and alienated and in real trouble and needing to be affirmed. People like us from Australia, England, who kind of were looking on and keen to help. And a small group of people from older continuing Anglican groups like the Church of England in South Africa, and I think there was the American Reformed Episcopal or something. So these four different groups gathered together for a week of conference and also visiting various sites in Jerusalem. It was unexpectedly uplifting, and I must say I thought they'd never pull it off. I thought, how can you get 1,000 people to go on these trips? But it was wonderful, and things like gathering at the old gates of this temple down on the Fulda steps, and as a whole group of us singing and thinking this is where St. Peter probably gave, if not his address at Pentecost, did the baptisms. We were kind of touching again the roots of the Christian faith, which reflected the agenda of the conference.
What was the agenda and why the meeting now?
The best way to describe that, John, is in terms of the statement they gave. Despite some of the things said in the press, this is not a split in the Anglican Church, because the Anglican Communion is not a church. So often people see us as a reflection of Rome. We're not a church. We're a communion of churches, or a fellowship of churches. Communion is just the Greek word for having in common. GAFCON meant to fundamentally and powerfully reaffirm our Anglicanism. It was, for Sydney people, it was refreshingly, for me anyway, and powerfully pro-Anglican and pro the communion. And as the opening address by Archbishop Akinola said, we believe in conviction Anglicanism. But there were three things which have led to it, three facts on the ground, and they are what I call defection, reaction, and failure. The defection, it's believed by many, many of these people, they would have represented up to half, almost half of Anglicans in the world, basically Central Africa, Australia, some Sydney and some English and other places, that there is a different approach to the gospel going on in significant parts of the world, especially America, which is reflected in, but not uniquely to, the ordination of the homosexual bishop. That's led to a reaction in that various people in America have been unable to stay in their dioceses, but being Anglicans, didn't want to become independent, wanted Episcopal oversight, and so African dioceses have provided Episcopal leadership in America. That's been the reaction, crossing boundaries. And thirdly, a failure. There's been a failure of the communion instruments to exercise discipline in the situation. So the Global Anglican Futures Conference was trying to face the world has changed, the communion has changed, we now need to do something for ourselves. A sleeping giant has been awoken, and let's act. And I think that's the whole spirit. It was very positive and very humble.
One question before I invite Muriel Porter and Robert Fordham into the discussion. Why is homosexuality the touchstone?
It's a touchstone in that it happened. It wasn't chosen by the people at GAFCON. It was chosen by the people in leadership in America.
Yes, but why choose homosexuality as something up with which you will not put?
Because it is a form of behaviour. Whenever it is mentioned in the scriptures, condemned, it is a question of morality, not just church order. At GAFCON, there were women priests, and there were those opposed to women priests.
So you don't accept as a threshold issue that there are people who are biologically conditioned to be gay?
No, that's got nothing to do with the biologically conditioned. Biological conditioning is not a question of morality. The question is, as the Archbishop of Canterbury put it so well, what is the kind of life which God can bless in the church?
Yes.
And if a church wishes to be faithful to the scriptures and to Catholic tradition, it is believed very strongly that this is a key moral touchstone issue.
So homosexuality is a moral issue for
Absolutely.
You. It is a moral issue, and it can be no other.
And exactly. I think there are three views in the Anglican Communion on homosexuality. Those who believe that it's irrelevant for morality, but what matters is faith or relationships. That would be the view, I imagine, of many in the TEC. Those of whom, I think the GAFCON view is that it is not a way of life consistent with life in Christ. We're not talking about orientation but behaviour. And many others who are saying it's a kind of open question, I suspect. GAFCON were those who thought that this church, in moving across this boundary, had shifted from traditional Orthodox Anglicanism. But it's not that alone. There's a lot of people trying to make clear it wasn't just about that. This reflects a deeper set of issues.
Yeah, but it's picked up by sexuality because a few years before it was the ordination of women, then women bishops. So it has profoundly to do with sexuality.
No, ordination of women and women bishops is irrelevant to GAFCON. There were women priests there, and the tent of GAFCON, if I could use that language, includes Anglo-Catholic, Evangelicals, Charismatics, those who believe in women's ministry as priests, those who don't. It was a much broader field than those questions.
One final question. Is this going to split the church? Some people have said, no, it's not intended to split the church. Others have said, yes, the split will be de facto, if not de jure.
What do you mean by the church, John?
Well, the Anglican Communion. See, now, again, you're adopting a definition which I imagine Sydney people are very comfortable with. That is, the church really ultimately is only the gathered faithful.
I'm just simply saying what
communion
we are.
Of churches.
We are a communion of autonomous, independent churches.
But you are choosing to strike across that autonomy by setting up the Primate's Council in a way which allows people, correct me if I'm wrong, if they wish, if a local diocese or a local church even felt it was out of communion with its bishop because its bishop supported Lambeth and Gene Robinson, could that local communion or local diocese then choose to affiliate with a bishop from the new Primate's Council?
I think you put your finger on what is actually the presenting issue. Take a friend of mine, David Short, the rector of St. John's Shaughnessy in Vancouver. I almost forgot where it was. This was some 2003. Decisions were taken by their synod and by their bishop, which that church said, we cannot accept. This is a crossing. This is a deal-breaking issue. But being good Anglicans, they didn't want to be alone. They could not accept the oversight of that bishop. But they don't want to be independent. They want a bishop, and ultimately the bishop of what's called the Southern Cone, which is the pointy end of South America, Greg Venables, has taken them on board. And Bishop Harvey, who's an Anglo-Catholic, interestingly, is their bishop, crossing the boundary. What's behind GAFCON is saying that when it comes to Anglican identity, shall David Short and his church be non-Anglicans because they cannot accept what they regard as intolerable behaviour by the bishop, their bishop? Or can another bishop from outside take them on board under their realm, even though it's breaking the normal rule, which it's a good rule of geographic integrity. We've waited for the normal instruments of communion to deal with this. They haven't. GAFCON has said,
but they couldn't.
They could have. No, they could have. They could have. It's a new situation. What GAFCON has said is, here's a collection of primates, a council of primates, who are going to say to people like David and others, and that you are still Anglican, and that the Archbishop of Canterbury, whom we love and respect, is not going to have the monopoly on the decision of who's Anglican.
But on the very same basis that you say, the Anglican Communion is a communion of independent churches. That's Canterbury correct. Could not discipline the United States and Canada.
No, but Canterbury could say two things. It could not invite those who'd ordained Robinson, whereas he did, a foolish action. My own view is it was odd. He did not invite Robinson. I've no idea why, because he was a validly elected bishop. But he invited those who ordained Robinson, but he did not invite those who'd been appointed by Uganda and Nigeria and others for America, like Bishop Mins. In other words, he was saying these are the kosher ones and these are not. And I think there's a deep distrust in the power of this one man, as much as wonderful man as he is, a man appointed not by the Anglican Communion, but by the English government, to decide who's Anglican. So I think that's what's at stake, John. This is the question of Anglican identity, not about split, but who determines who is Anglican. Is it totally in the hands of the establishment in England, or is it now in the hands of the communion more broadly understood?
And it's at that point that I should welcome again Muriel Porter and Robert Fordham. Muriel Porter first, your observations about GAFCON and its meaning and the points Robert Forsyth has made.
I don't know where to start, John, except to say welcome back safely, Robert.
Thanks, Muriel. Love to hear from you, my friend. Despite what we say tonight, I do love you.
Lovely time. But let me just do a bit of a tangent on this one, John. I've just been in Sydney, just got back myself this evening, and I've been speaking to a small group in Sydney, the Movement for the Ordination of Women. And those people would very much like to have the same consideration that it seems that the representatives at GAFCON are keen to show people who feel disaffected in America.
Just explain that for us a little.
Well, here are people in Sydney Diocese who long for a little more openness, a little more consideration, a little more opportunity, some opportunity, any opportunity, to experience the ministry of women priests. Sydney Diocese does not and will not allow that. And they're puzzled, the people that I spoke to, that here is Sydney and other parts of the GAFCON crowd wanting to authorise people to cross boundaries and go in and look after people who feel unloved, unwanted, disaffected, not fearing their Anglican identity. And yet they would love the opportunity for women priests to come from, say, Melbourne or Newcastle, not even to be vicars, rectors, just to be allowed to come in occasionally, preside at the Eucharist, so that they could experience it under proper control and regulation.
So you're saying there's an inconsistency in behaviour here?
Inconsistency, that's what I'm saying. If there's going to be this relaxing of boundaries and for good moral reason, then I think people in Sydney and Nigeria and other places have to hear that there are others who would love the same sort of respect for their sense of alienation and disaffection.
Robert Fordham. Robert.
Yes, indeed.
Your observations.
Well, I'm at a bit of a disadvantage in that I heard what Robert had to say, but for some reason or other I couldn't hear anything of what Muriel's contribution was. So.
Well, we'll try and fix the line there. We'll deal with that technically here to sort that out to the best of our ability.
Yes, yeah, sure.
Your observations on what Robert said.
Well, obviously, I'm disappointed, perhaps not surprised. A number of people across the communion, I think very much a minority, have been looking for something of this nature for some time. And I guess with the coming Lambeth Conference, this was their last opportunity to take forward their view in the way in which they have. It's a tragedy that they've seen fit not to go to Lambeth. I note with interest the comments by the Archbishop of Melbourne when he made it clear that Lambeth Conference will provide an opportunity to live the unity that we share in Christ, end of quote. And yet these people have seen fit not to take up that opportunity. And so by going off on their own, they have started a schismatic process that I think really is a tragedy for the communion, for the Anglican Church. I would much prefer to use the term the Anglican Church rather than see it in the way that Bishop Forsyth has. But we will move on, and I've no doubt Lambeth will proceed, that it will be a great success, but that there will be real problems in trying to reconcile the views of this group.
Robert Fordham, you are one of those who believes that this is a momentous event, that it's not simply another one of those moments where everybody gets a bit excited for a while and then it all sort of goes away.
Well, it certainly has the potential to be just that, and I have no doubt that that's the wish of the organisers. Archbishop Gentian has spoken of a new reality. He clearly sees this as a watershed for which there is no turning back, and it's dealing with that watershed is going to be the challenge that the Archbishop of Canterbury, the Lambeth Conference, and the body that I'm a member of, the Anglican Consultative Council, is going to have to face over the next 12 months. What I find fascinating is that on the one hand, this group speak deeply of the need for a contemporary rule, and that's this Jerusalem Declaration. Yet on the other hand, they're not prepared to have a contemporary reading of the Bible. And although the touchstone issue described by Robert is this issue of homosexual behaviour, the real issue behind it all is in fact an understanding of the reading of the Bible in society today, and that is the matter that Lambeth, I know, is going to address. I know it's the matter that the Archbishop of Canterbury is determined to pursue at the international level. It'll be interesting to see whether this new organisation that's now being created will be part of that dialogue, or whether they're going to just simply go their own way.
Muriel Porter, before I ask Robert Forsyth one or two more questions following out of that, do you believe that this is a significant moment for Anglicanism, or something that will eventually blow itself out?
I'm not terribly sure yet. I'll be watching and waiting. Quite a few of the people I've been speaking to around the church here in Australia, and particularly in Melbourne, share with me the same level of let's wait and see. We're not too quick to jump into what might come out of this. I think it could turn into a bit of a damp squib. I think it's very interesting to see some of the reaction that's coming out of England. What this might do, I don't know, but it might really strengthen the arm of the rest of the church, if you like, not the people who are pro-GAFCON, but the rest of us who I think are more than half of the church, Robert Forsyth. But we really, I think, might be a bit strengthened by thinking, heavens, we can't let this happen. I've heard people say, enough's enough. Time we didn't just take all this lying down. So I think it might strengthen the arm of the rest of us, if you like, so that there might be reaction from that point of view. But I take Robert Fordham's point as well. I think there is a level in which this is a watershed of no turning back. And in the end, it might turn out that we do go in two different pathways, whether you call it a schism or not. It looks increasingly like that to me. And if that's what's got to happen so that the rest of the church is not forced down the road of a way of reading scripture and a way of interpreting modern society and a way of interpreting human sexual behaviour and orientation, all of those things in the one straitjacket, then I, for one, would welcome the opportunity for the rest of the church to say, here we stand on the side of people who are of homosexual orientation, on the side of women clergy and bishops, on the side of a much more nuanced and what I believe to be an authentic reading of Scripture in our day and time.
Rob Forsyth, muddling through the traditional Anglican approach, or do you believe that this really is a sea change moment?
Well, I think I agree with Muriel. It's very hard to tell at this stage. I don't agree that this event last week in Jerusalem is the decisive issue. The decisive issue was the ordination of Gene Robinson as a bishop, as a practicing homosexual. That has set it going.
Yeah, but there've been people splitting in the United States seeking consecration or ordination through other bishops for 5 or 6 years before the Gene Robinson thing.
It's been brewing, and certainly because it's not just about this, but this has been the decisive issue. I think we've got to put this issue aside. Some of your listeners will say this is a stupid idea because gays should be Christian. Behaving as a gay person, homosexual behaviour is Christian. Others say it's not. The question is, given the decisions on that, as I understand my friend Muriel saying, she believes that homosexual Christians should be able to exercise their sexuality in full of the church.
Faithfully and monogamously, exactly. And caringly and lovingly.
Okay, and that's a huge difference, right? Now, that's a viewpoint which I respect.
It's not as profound as the divinity of Christ.
No, it isn't. It isn't. It's not as profound as that, but it is profound. It is profound. You see, traditional Christian understanding was this, that God made us male and female, and that the proper expression of sexuality was in marriage. If you're unmarried, the proper expression was in abstinence. Now, a view is held by many sincere people like my friend Muriel, there's a third way. That's the issue which is dividing us. And Muriel may be right. There are different ways of reading the Bible. Robert Fordham is not right in saying this is an anti-Lambeth. Many from GAFCON are going to go to Lambeth. Greg Venables, the bishop from the Southern Cone.
But not you, Robert.
No, that's different. It's not about me. It's about GAFCON. Many are not going. Bishop Nazarelli said he can't go because he can't take communion with those who ordained Gene Robinson. It's a conscience matter. Others, you may sneer at his conscience, Muriel, but it's a conscience matter.
I didn't sneer.
Greg Benneville said, I want you all to go to Lambeth to tell them not to ignore this. My big fear is that the power elite, the English power elite and others in America, will treat this as they've constantly treated this as a not serious matter. The Africans, I think, have run out of patience. The feeling that they have been patronised and not taken seriously was very evident in this conference.
What they're saying is,
why should this man decide who's Anglican? We believe the time has come. You've shifted the ground rules of what is a Christian behaviour. You've not disciplined those who've done so. The time for action has arrived.
That's dragging a red herring across the path, though, isn't it, Robert? The anti-colonial is a bit of a red herring.
I'm saying it's a reality I noticed.
The Church of England in South Africa, one of the bodies that support GAFCON, are a group who were notorious for supporting apartheid for many years.
It's not about the Church of England in South Africa. That was a white, now black church. I'm just saying that behind this, one of the factors historically, John, is an awareness that English-centred Anglicanism is passing. That's what I'm saying. Most Anglicans in the world today are not white, they're black.
Exactly,
and therefore the Archbishop of Canterbury's decision that he alone can decide and let someone like David Short hang out to dry, he hasn't acted. That's why this Council of Primates, African, though we hope there is one South American, more will join, want to say, no, we want to affirm an American province, an American alternative Anglican church, if you like, that will bring together all the dissidents, no longer under Rwanda.
This is the dog's breakfast.
No, it's not a dog's breakfast. It's saying those who cannot stay in that church but want to stay as Anglicans like David Shaw and James Packer.
Robert,
they need affirmation.
Robert, you're suggesting the American church will split.
Oh, yes, it has split. Not will split, has split. It's a fact on the ground. It's not a question of GAFCON causing a split. GAFCON's trying to bring order in a chaotic situation
because
of the split. People like Peter Ingham, people like those who ordained Gene Robinson, they have caused the split. They've forced Orthodox, faithful Anglicans, many cases losing their buildings and property, in other cases massive court cases, to say we cannot stay, but we want to stay Anglican. Who will care for them? Who will care for those who are Orthodox Anglicans? That's what GAFCON's trying to do.
Robert Fordham.
Well, the American church, both in the US and Canada, is certainly is endeavouring to reach out to those same groups. They've bent over backwards to provide opportunities for dissident congregations so that they can be ministered to by a bishop appointed in accordance with their own constitution. But the idea of breaking up traditional Anglican notions of diocese by just simply going in and establishing a bishop within an already existing diocese, that really strikes at the heart of Anglican order, as both Robert and I know it. And that this really becomes the issue that is going to create enormous tension. The reality is it's only a minority of people, both in the Canada and US, that have reacted. Because they haven't got their way, they have found a champion in some parts of Africa, and in one case in the Diocese of the Southern Cone, the province of the Southern Cone. And it's just simply extending the difficulties in North America by giving succor to such dissidents. And it's
extraordinary. Can I say that attitude is exactly the you've put so well the exact problem, Robert. That dismissing attitude of these dissidents, the kind of moral superiority you've brought
it's
to it.
It's nothing to do with moral superiority.
The belief.
They have a church that is dealing with it.
A church which is allowing the ordination of gay people as acting gay people and the blessing of homosexual relationships, which they regard as contrary to the gospel. They cannot stay in that church. They haven't changed Anglicanism. Bishop Ingham has changed Anglicanism.
But Anglicanism has always been flexible at the fringes.
Oh, yes, but not at the centre. See, John...
You're saying it was Bishop Ingham rather than his diocese?
No, and his diocese.
It went to three synods.
No, I'm not denying his diocese. I'm simply saying that the numbers don't... The dismissal of them as being a minority, the dismissal of them somehow being illegitimate, begs the question, the revisionists who wish to change the gospel and change Christian morality...
Change your interpretation of the gospel.
Change Anglicanism for what Anglicanism has always taught, what Rome teaches, what the Orthodox teach at this issue. This is not some bride... This is the Christians who are being persecuted, who are having their churches locked against them, are the ones standing for... Persecuted. Court cases. One of my friends can't get to his vestry because... They're going to court. Far than being open-handed, the churches in the in Canada and America are persecuting Orthodox Christians who will not accept their authority.
I'd like to turn the issue, rather than the heat being directed on America, let's turn the heat to Australia for a moment. Muriel Porter, let me bring you in here. Do you think the tensions between those dioceses and churches that support Sydney and the rest of the church in Australia could lead to a position where you have competing authorities within the church in Australia?
Yes, well, I was just thinking that, John, as I was listening to Robert. You see, if one of the dioceses in Australia should make a decision that Sydney disapproves of for some reason or other, it might be about homosexuality, but it might be about something else. It could even be about divorce, because our Lord was quite strong about divorce and actually talked about anyone who married a divorced person was actually committing adultery. And I would have thought if we're talking about gospel morality, that might have been an issue that people might have taken up far more strongly than they did. I'm glad they didn't. But were that to be an issue again, and I know the Diocese of Melbourne, for instance, has a much broader view of remarriage of divorced people in church than the Diocese of Sydney, for instance. But if it was some issue like that that my diocese were to take up and Sydney disapproved, then are we going to see the same thing happening? Yes, there are places that aren't happy. All these persecuted people will come in and look after you. I think that's the sort of scenario that might frighten some people in Australia. Yeah. I don't think it will, because we on the other side, outside Sydney, tend to be much more sort of patient and think, we'd better not take up that issue because we don't want to split the church, etc., etc. But there is that very real fear that who is it who is determining what is morality, what is gospel morality, what is the tradition of the church? The tradition of the church in the view of our Lord, and look at the Roman Catholic position on this, on divorce and remarriage, has been a very strong one for a very long time. There are different views held around the church. That's fine, but it has not split the church. But that's my concern, that you, Robert, are saying that the Archbishop of Canterbury, one man, shouldn't decide who's in and out of Anglicanism, but you and your friends in GAFCON want to decide who is and who is not obeying the gospel. And I find that very offensive.
You're on Sunday Night on ABC Radio Around Australia. John Cleary with you. My guests discussing the future of Anglicanism in the light of the events of this week, the GAFCON conference in Jerusalem, which declared a separate primate's council independent of Rowan Williams, the Archbishop of Canterbury, and the Lambeth Conference, which has been taken as the supreme consultative body in the Anglican Church worldwide. Our guests are Robert Forsyth, the Anglican Bishop of South Sydney, Muriel Porter, author and commentator on Anglicanism in Australia, and Robert Fordham, a member of the Anglican Consultative Council. Let me ask Robert Fordham. Robert, this issue in Australia, has the primacy of the Anglican primate, the Archbishop of Brisbane, now come into question in Australia?
Oh, I wouldn't have thought so at all. He was overwhelmingly elected, and I don't think he's done anything since, or anything's happened within our church, apart from some difficulties with the Diocese of Sydney, that would in any sense threaten his position.
What would happen, Robert Fordham, if Philip Aspinall chooses to be in communication with Gene Robinson? Will that provoke a situation under the GAFCON arrangements where he would be considered out of communion with those of his bishops who didn't agree with his position?
Well, the only bishops I think who would be in that situation would come from the Diocese of Sydney, so I guess Robert would be in a better position to comment on that. The reality is that the GAFCON group and this new creation, this Fellowship of Confessing Anglicans, have decided to rupture relations with the Anglican Church in both Canada and the US. That's certainly not a position taken on by Archbishop Aspinall, or for that matter, the Church in Australia. So you have your point of tension already in terms of recognition and relationship that's already been established. And I don't expect that situation will change. So whether dissenting dioceses such as Sydney will wish to take some action in Australia because our primate continues to recognise these two component parts of the communion is very much up to the Diocese of Sydney.
Will the Diocese of Sydney continue to recognise the primacy of Philip Aspinall?
Absolutely. If I may.
What about if Philip Aspinall says he doesn't wish churches to affiliate with bishops outside their diocese?
He's entitled to his view.
His view. You could ignore his view.
Of course. The primate is not.
So what happens to primacy?
Primacy, and you don't understand how Anglicanism works.
Well, I do, but I'm asking you.
He is a respected, can I say he's been an excellent primate and highly regarded right across the church. Australia, this is not about Australia. Australia has been very conservative on these matters. The General Assembly before last, we passed overwhelming resolutions affirming Lambeth 110. Australia is not a problem area here.
For political reasons, Robert.
You may say, I'm telling you what they did. You may want to discount it. I'm saying what they did. If a diocese in Australia did a New Hampshire, Dane to Dean Robertson, that's different. But we're expecting differences. There have been differences for 120 years.
No, it's an important point
here. Very clear, this is not about Australia, it's about America.
But it could be about Australia. Said about the way the impairment of relationships happens between a bishop who chooses to associate with Gene Robinson and recognise Gene Robinson.
No, it's not about association. It's not about association. We're expecting a communion that will be quite messy. I'll be in communion with you.
Yes.
You may be in communion with them, but I'm not in communion with them. We're expecting, in other words, the communion to be far less neat. But there's no one ever, in all the things I've heard, of any suggestion that this is about Australia, unless action was taken like in America. Already there are massive differences, as Muriel and my friend Robert have pointed out. Women bishops, but we've not broken communion. We're going to work with it. This is not like, that's order. Church order is difficult. Even within GAFCON, there are women bishops, or rather women priests. They're a high church. Not yet, but they're women priests. Women priests at the conference handing out communion.
Robert?
What's that?
How many?
I don't know. I just took it. I saw a number and noticed them and thought they're Anglo-Catholic, they're evangelical, charismatic. The GAFCON tent is a broad tent. It's crucial to see that. And it would be disastrous for the movement if we made it any narrower.
Just how broad that tent is was given some indication on the Religion Report, our sister program on our sister network this week, when it pointed out that the name Confessing Churches fitted very comfortably with a movement that has been spread across a number of Protestant denominations who have opposed the gay issue over the years. The Uniting Church here in Australia, its anti-gay movement is called the Confessing Units right. within the Uniting Church. It's pointed out that many of these things have links back to the writings of a man called Thomas Oden, and suggesting that groups of confessing churches be set up within denominations on this issue. And indeed, Oden, as a member of the Institute for Religion and Democracy in the United States, is close to one of the people, certainly and perhaps more, on Akinola's staff, and they have a traditional link back to very virulent anti-gay organisations in the United States who have been prepared to fund them. Now,
John, you can't get away with that.
Well, I'm merely stating the facts.
No. The implication behind your facts was that was a claim that somehow this movement is nothing more than this kind of extreme group.
I'm not suggesting Oden may have
made these predictions. He may be right in predictions. The thing that marked GAFCON, and it was interesting because I came somewhat nervous to GAFCON. I feared it would be homophobic in the literal sense of aggressively anti-gay and aggressively self-righteous. I was touched, and others have to simply believe this, by the sense of repentance and of humility. And although it was very clear on the gay issue, it was not the rabid thing I was afraid of. Now, I don't know Oden's views. There may be in that room, it was 1,000 people, John. I'm not saying I know one in that room, but you cannot mark the movement.
But you're pointing to the significance of the American element, and I'm simply giving you an example.
I'm saying, if it wasn't for what happened in America and Indeed. In Canada, there would be no GAFCON.
And thus, it's appropriate to point out some of the links in America.
You may be right, but I'm saying you can't use those pointing out to imply. And this has been the problem. The constant statement, the reason why Africa voted for 110 last time was because of money. Whatever you think, whether we're right or wrong, you must take this movement seriously as a sincere movement, not as an insincere front for something else. Unless GAFCON is taken seriously by Lambeth and dealt with in a way, we may not get all we want, I'm not saying that, but understood we're sincere, deeply committed Anglicans, there'll be disaster for the communion.
1-300-800-222, if you want to give us a quick call on this matter, 1-300-800-222. We can fit in 4 or 5 calls before the top of the clock on Sunday night on ABC Radio around Australia. The Honourable Robert Fordham, member of the Anglican Consultative Council, Bishop Robert Forsyth and Dr. Muriel Porter are our guests on Sunday night. How will this play out, Robert Fordham, with regard to the Anglican Consultative Council? What's its step?
It's too early to call on that. The sequence of events was for the Lambeth Conference to be responding to the issues that have been alluded to, but the much deeper issues of the establishment of a new Anglican covenant, which I note with interest that the Jerusalem Declaration didn't make any reference to, and the press statement that supported it. Whereas a group of people across all the spectrum of the church have been working on this now for quite some time. That covenant is due to go from Lambeth and then to the Anglican Consultative Council, which is the only constitutional body in the whole of the Anglican Communion. We're meeting in May next year, and that is to deal with that issue. And, of course, with any of the other outworkings from Lambeth, and inevitably this GAFCON issue will be before us. It's just very difficult to treat it as seriously as Robert says and decide that this is the first order issue when some other matters of far greater moment, I would have thought, within the communion, such as women priests, women in the episcopate, the issues of divorce that Muriel's referred to, have been able to hold the communion together. And yet this what would appear to be a second-order issue is now being thrust upon us in a way that is quite extraordinary.
You're on Sunday night. We'll take some calls to Claudia in Canberra first. Hello, Claudia. Welcome. What would you like to say?
Hello, John. This is probably going to come out of left field where you're concerned, quite apart from the theological discussion that you've been having there. I'm really amazed, as an Anglican myself, that these bishops who pushed off to Jerusalem and are whipping themselves into a lather about a few gay people, a tiny minority of gay people, and also about the women bishops and priests in the church, that we don't hear a peep out of them about the total suppression and destruction of the freedom of the people from the countries in which they come. These African bishops particularly, what has happened to them? Most of them come from countries where there are tyrannical dictators who are torturing and killing their people, who have absolutely no human rights. What's happened to the people of the stature of people like Father Trevor Huddleston, Bishop Tutu, who spoke out against apartheid? These men are only concerned with holding their own power and having arcane discussions about theology, whether gays should be in the church, whether women should be allowed to become priests. Not a word about the thousands of people who are crying out for some kind of assistance. What's happened to their backbone in their own countries? It really amazes me. If Jesus Christ had been as prejudiced as these people are, we would not have had a church, John. Never mind an Anglican church. There would have been no Christian church because he preached to everybody. He was inclusive. These guys are trying to be exclusive, and that really horrifies me. I'm not surprised that in the Anglican churches, the congregations are getting smaller every year.
All right, Claudia, we'll get Robert Forsyth's own
brief comment. That's an appalling slander on these bishops. Women priest is not an issue in GAFCON. It's put in the secondary issue. Secondly, these guys are living with growing, massively growing churches, not declining churches. To call the question of homosexual behaviour as arcane and obscure is to miss the very point at stake.
What about the civil rights issue?
It's a major issue. I'm not in Africa, but these guys are living with it. And it's a very complicated question, let me tell you for them. Many people there have suffered persecution, not by the ACC, but in literal terms. Whatever you say, they may be wrong, but they're men of deep integrity and spirituality, convinced that the West gave them the gospel, but now the West is undermining the gospel. Take them seriously.
Claudia, thanks for your call. Philip in Ipswich. Philip, what would you like to say? Philip, you there? Philip, can you hear us? Philip? No, Philip must have gone away. Arthur on the north coast of New South Wales. Hello, Arthur. Welcome to you.
Good day, mate. How are you?
Yeah, great. What would you like to say?
Mate, I was an acting homosexual, and I was taught that through the word that this is an abominable act. And you can go right through the Bible and you can read where it says it's not acceptable. Now, I have belonged to the Anglican Church for years, but I have left the Anglican Church because I will not accept acting or people who are gay and who practice homosexuality to be a clergy to me. And I was told that I have to be more broad-minded, but I just walked away.
So you broadly support the position outlined by Robert Forsyth as being a very significant issue?
I support the Archbishop of Sydney and the Bishop of, Redfern in everything they do.
That'll do. Bishop of Redfern, I'm proud for that.
Thanks for your comment, Arthur. All the best.
Can I just say, John, yes. It's not about Sydney. There are 9 primates, Akinola, Afoni, Kaloni, Mikowa, Nzimbi, Arombi and Venables. These are big men in terms of the Anglican Church. It's not about Sydney. It's about the Global South key leaders giving a leadership. We've played a part, but it's not about Sydney. And mustn't be seen.
Provinces in the Anglican
and
community.
I understand that, but mustn't be seen in this somewhat, again, parochial, domestic view. It's not about England. It's not about Sydney. It's about America and what's gone on there and how the Africans are now standing up to the plate.
You're saying Africans, but that's...
Central Africa. I'm not saying all Africans.
Because the Southern Africans are different, but it's not just the Africans.
I know that.
Sydney is vitally important in this, and America is vitally important in
America is crucial in this, John. Yes.
But Sydney is also.
Peter Jentz has played a key role in helping get the program together.
But Sydney has played a key role since Broughton Knox came to Moore College in the 1950s and began to teach an understanding of the church, which supports the view that's being broadcast here. Muriel Porter, your observation.
No, it's not true.
Muriel.
Oh, well, yes, I would agree with that, John. It's a bit difficult to explain it all in detail to your listeners tonight, but there is a trajectory that has been happening, certainly in Sydney, and Robert Forsyth would know that as well as I do, a particular way of looking at the church, the scriptures, human behaviour. And I think that is the way that has shaped Sydney. But more importantly than that, when Robert says it's nothing, Sydney's really got nothing to do with it, it's not important, I'm looking forward to seeing what role Peter Jensen's going to have. Robert, are you saying that he really won't have any role from now on, or is he...
No, I don't know. I'm just saying...
Is he going to be part of a sort of a senior advisor to the Prime Minister?
He may be. That's not my point. I think he has played a significant role in providing help. It's just that to try and see the whole issue in local, domestic Anglican Church politics in Sydney, I think, is to miss significance. In fact, I think GAFCON will be good for Sydney because it makes us believe in Anglicanism again.
Well, because it gives you a forum of authority. You can appeal to a higher authority now.
No,
you cannot be acting alone. Is that
No, it's not that. It's just that, and as Archbishop Akinola put it on the first night, we are conviction Anglicans.
Well,
in Sydney, we've always been... Now, I'm just saying, for our diocese, there's a kind of Anglicanism which is not associated with compromise that may have an impact long term to make us proudly Anglican again. Just a side thought.
Not associated with compromise, but surely the nature of the Anglican Church is about compromise.
There's so much we can say. The key thing of Anglicanism is on issues of salvation and authority, no, but in secondary matters, and secondary matters include, in GAFCON, even matters which Muriel and I disagree about women bishops. That's a secondary matter for GAFCON.
We've got to wind this discussion up. We've only got a minute or so left. Robert Fordham, you're somebody who's going to have to be actively involved in this. You mentioned briefly the role of the Anglican Consultative Council. Your broad projection on the next year or so, first for Australia and then internationally.
Look, Australia, our standing committee of our General Synod meets next October. We will have reports from Lambeth at that. It will be very interesting to see whether Sydney wishes to present their new reality to the Standing Committee and what the reaction will be. My own view is that it certainly is most unlikely to be welcomed. Internationally, it's going to be very messy. There's no question about that. We will again have to wait and see what comes from Lambeth and what goes going forward in terms of the covenant, because the covenant is meant to be the relationship between the various provinces, the 38 provinces, including those from Central Africa, and the rest of the communion. And that process, if it's not proceeded with, it will be very, very difficult indeed. But I must make the point that I reject the notion that I'm not an Orthodox Anglican, that I'm not a conviction Anglican. I've been that way all my life. And for Robert to label this new group as the people who represent those words and the rest of us are somehow or other different is pretty disappointing.
Muriel Porter, you've got about 10 seconds to say your good nights. Thank you, Muriel, for joining us.
Thank you, John.
Robert Forsyth, thank you for joining us.
Can I say, Robert is right. The covenant will be crucial, and I think we'll see what the Lambeth can produce, if anything. There may be a way forward yet.
Thank you all three for joining us. You're on Sunday night on ABC Radio Around Australia.